welcome to Career Competitor, where we welcome guests to share insights that will light the fire within you to make a career of competing. Whether that be in your career, your business, your personal life, or simply within you, as the competitor within you might just be the greatest competition in your world. While I have you here, take the time to be rating the show, especially if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts. Also, be sure to subscribe or follow the show on whatever podcasting platform you're listening to us on. Finally, be sure to head to careercompetitor.com, where you can learn all about what it is I offer within my executive coaching company and what it is I could potentially do to you as an individual or on behalf of you within your team and or organization. I would love the opportunity to connect with you, so be sure to reach out to me, steve@careercompetitor.com. That's steve@careercompetitor.com. But like I said, head to the website and be sure to check out everything that I offer and to learn more about how I can be of impact to you within your world. But for now, let's welcome in our guest for this episode of Career Competitor. Okay, our career competitor today is the managing director and co-founder of Econic, an innovation, transformation, and strategy consulting company that caters to clients such as US Bank, John Deere, Procter & Gamble, and Blue Cross Blue Shield, to name a few. Our guest is dedicated to practicing unlearning, identifying limiting beliefs, and shifting business practices, while challenging business leaders to think bigger and more intentionally to discover the expansive value of using business for good. Currently, our guest has a book coming out titled Dare to Be Naive, Thinking Bigger to Create Business Success and Joy, where they present a new spin on the concept of ROI in that of ripples of impact. I always enjoy when I get to welcome those that I share a space with when it comes to advancing how individuals, leaders, teams, and cultures grow themselves, which is why I'm delighted to be welcoming to the show Mr. Joshua Berry. Joshua, how are we doing?
Steve, I'm doing well today. Thank you so much for that glorious introduction, as well as, again, the generosity and abundance that we can share this space, even potentially talking about the same type of work.
100%. And so much of what you represent and stand for is this notion of assuming the best in others, assuming the best in business, and very much trying to preach that first and foremost, but then obviously coach to that, consult to that, and encourage those towards that. So before we start diving into those really exciting and interesting topics, at least for myself, and I know for many people listening, tell us a little bit about Econic and obviously your role with the company today.
Sure. I co-founded Econic in December of 2015. Today, we have a distributed team. Several of us are still here in Nebraska, but we have team members throughout the United States that are helping do projects for companies, really that help them get from here to there is the easiest way to describe that. So for instance, a mid-sized company who needs help thinking about new business models or new business strategy, we might help their executive team shift their mindsets, as well as all the way to helping them start an innovation lab. In other organizations, we might help them with cultural change programs, which, similar to yourself, we believe aren't just, you know, swoop in and do a workshop, but actually provide a workshop and then all the in-between times for people to be able to practice those behaviors that are most important to growing themselves and their companies. My role is managing director today, and my team has been gracious enough to give me the opportunity to go and write this book and do awesome podcasts with people like you, Steve.
Yeah, and I immediately, you know, find this complete connection in this notion of going from here to there, because I think sometimes, and you can certainly speak from experience, when I go and sit down with someone, even in just that initial meeting, that potential, just, you know, really just prior to providing what it is I could do for someone, people almost want, where's the start and where's the finish? Where's the start? Where's the finish? And so often when it comes to business, when it comes to life for that matter, who are we to define where the finish is? Because how can we possibly know? And I'm just curious, from your experience so far in the work you do, how do you find that conversation? Because I think that's something that everybody can relate to.
It's very difficult. It's meeting somebody where they're at, right? If you have a very goal-oriented person, you need to meet them where they're at with goals. But many times in those relationships, we eventually get to a spot where we can say, what is it about your need for goals goals that you think is important for you? Like, how has that helped you and how has that hindered you in the past? So I believe having an endpoint or a finish line sometimes is a useful proxy, I guess, for people, if that's where they're at in life.
Yeah, it's almost a notion of safety. It's like people being able to say, okay, now I feel safe. I feel safe committing to what we're committing to because I know where we're going. But sometimes, and I've found this even with a 6-month commitment, a 12-month commitment, whatever it might be, at any point during that time, you can both sit there and be like, there's no way we're going to be done with this in the next 6 months or the next 12 months, right?
It's useful to help people get started. I like to talk about one of our best client relationships. We've been doing work with them every month since January of 2014 without a contract. Wow. And I think most consulting and training organizations would say, oh, I need the contract. I need this guaranteed sort of thing. We kind of went to the opposite. And we said, I don't know what you need. And I want you at any point to be able to look at us and say, thumbs down, I think we're good. But let's continue to keep coming back to each other and force the conversations of saying, is this still working out for us? And what we find out is we're able to help them continue to grow and, you know, things continue to evolve and the relationship works that way. So at a point, I'm sure there's a good opportunity to have the proxy of a finish line, but other times, you know, just believing is your point and just getting started and the fluidity of it all actually probably more mirrors how nature works.
And that is such a refreshing story to hear that there's not that necessity to be contractually almost obligated to one another for you to have this healthy relationship, which is true collaboration at its finest. It's when people can enter an agreement, a relationship, however you want to call it, and just be so collaborative that there's that understanding that every single month there's going to be an opportunity to stop, to reset, and consider what's best. What's best for this relationship? What's best for this environment right now? Or what's best for this service that we're providing you right now? And I think that is a message that needs to be heard and needs to be felt in this day and age for sure.
Yeah. You know, and don't get me wrong, I just wrote a book on being naive. So don't just take my advice and throw all your contracts out. But like I'll introduce here and I share in the book, the idea isn't go do contracts or no contracts, just to be more intentional about understanding, okay, how does requiring a contract benefit you and how does it not serve you? And just to be intentional about those things going into it, right?
Yeah, I get that from just the surface level information I've been able to obtain just prior coming into this conversation. And for me, it's almost like a commitment to finding clarity, a commitment to finding a reassurance, and use this word good a lot in the work that you do. And I love it because there's a simplicity to it. There's such a simplicity to it because we know when you say to someone, hey, is this good or is it not good? More often than not, people are pretty good at determining whether or not it's good or not. And, you know, it's right? And so I would love for you, let's start there really in terms of when you say something like doing good, I would love to just hear that from your perspective, really where you're coming from with that.
Yeah. It is very much a trying to do what is best for the other person and trying not to cause intentional harm, right? Both of those are in play there. It comes from, and I think you just hit it there, Steve, that most people, I believe, have that internal compass inside of them, right? They have something inside of them that they stopped and listened to it for a little bit. They can realize if it's telling them this feels like the right thing to do or not to do. And that actually comes back to why I chose the word naive in the book title. When I was doing research and interviews for this book, I ran into a lot of successful business leaders who at a point in the interview would pause and say, this might sound naive, but, and then shared a really amazing business practice or philosophy or idea or whatever it might be. And I started thinking, like, what stops people from just being naive? And that led me down a path of understanding the word naive actually in its original meaning just meant innate, or it meant native, or that which was in you from the start. And so I think there's a key little piece right there, Steve, that to what is good. And what do I mean by good is oftentimes it's when you pause and you're able to say, like, what actually is inside of you from the start telling you to do, and maybe following that voice often enough, even if it sounds naive to the outside world.
Oh my gosh, what a discovery. That it is one of those words that does come up a lot for me. And I even find myself saying it as a coach, quite often, it's almost my way of safely going about an assumption, if you will. You know, like, forgive me for being naive. And it's almost like you're admitting in that moment, I'm assuming something right now. I'm making an assumption right now. And I want to preface that with almost your forgiveness prior to assuming it.
Yeah.
But I love that concept of the innate component. And I think I'm curious, just from some of that research, how did you find that discovery then fueled the next phase of the book? Where did you go from there once you had that initial discovery of really the origin, let's say, of the word naive?
Well, I'll say that's probably the middle of my journey of writing the book. The first part of writing the book was I was writing another book that I felt probably would have been akin to Conscious Capitalism. And as I was doing research on that book and had the privilege to speak with Raj Sisodia, one of the co-authors of that book, I learned that, you know, there are plenty of books that are out there that are saying, here's the business case for doing good through business. And I realized there's still people, even with all those good books, that still aren't doing good through business, or at least being intentional about the thoughts that they're having. So I figured it must be something else. It isn't just they need more logical arguments. And so that led us down the path of saying, you know, discovering people talking about being naive, and then further saying, okay, what is it that stops, even as you explained right there in your coaching sometimes, what is it that stops you from just owning an idea that sounds outside of the mainstream, especially if that idea has some rootedness in potential or abundance or generosity or goodness? I was fortunate that Seth Godin was an advanced reader of my book and provided a nice blurb for the book. And he basically, his summarization of it was, the world does not have a cynicism shortage. We need more of the generous naivete, right? Described in Joshua's book. And so that's kind of some of the path that led us down there.
God, that's a wonderful insight. And I wrote a book myself last year, and one of the ways that I really started to emphasize why I wrote it to people, it's about realizing potential. And so for me, I made it clear that people are great at giving you four or five reasons why not to pursue your potential. And it's the ones that choose that one reason as to why they go and do it. And with that, there's people would argue there's a naivete towards that group that says, I'm going to focus on the one. I'm going to focus on the one as opposed to the four or five reasons not to. That very much sounds like what you're saying here.
Absolutely. You know, I was listening to one of your recent podcasts about the famous artist Grandma Moses, and I think you do such an amazing job, not only of highlighting the importance of discipline in that, but also that there's a spark or potential or something you can lean into at any age. And so that's one of the things that excites me about potential, and I don't know, creating spaces for people to allow that to emerge.
Yeah, absolutely. We're right on the same page with that. And intentionality is a word that comes up for me all the time. There's probably been days where I've lost count of how often I've used the word, and certainly coach people towards better utilizing it within what they do. And you're touching on something here in terms of that being behind the ability to do good. So I'm curious, with the leaders that you're working with today, and not necessarily leaders, just any level of professional, how do you approach that part of it? How do you get them to start to say, well, listen, it's not about simply a result of doing good. It's the intentionality behind this desire to do good.
How we typically get started working with organizations and leaders to help them uncover intentionality is you have to start with work that actually matters to them, right? So we're working with a major utility, and they were thinking about the future of work and the workplace for their organization. We met them there and helped them realize that the conversations they were having around should people come back to the office or should they work remotely weren't grounded in which of those are better ideas, but actually underlying beliefs or principles that they had around people. So we actually did a concrete example. We did an anonymous survey with the team who was working on this and asked them questions like, given the chance, most people will steal if they can get away from it. You know, strongly disagree to strongly agree. right? I believe people are innately good, strongly disagree, strongly agree. And what we did is we were able to come back and show anonymously that there was such disparity among the team that actually the conversation was happening at the wrong level, right? And so that idea of being able to help them see that, you know, that these arguments of should people come back into the office or not come back into the office were actually rooted in things that were much deeper. And that allowed us to then start to help those leaders be a little bit more intentional about saying, you know, do we trust people or not trust people? And again, which of those things then inform the practices that we want to embrace in the organization? There are so many leaders who are walking around unintentionally continuing practices that they learned from previous organizations or leaders, right? So much of what we learned from Frederick Taylor and scientific management gave us a lot of great things, right? Being able to break down ideas into component tasks, hierarchy, those things did allow us to achieve a lot of things. But if you go back to some of the principles and beliefs that Frederick Taylor espoused, he said things like the man who is sufficiently stupid enough and phlegmatic enough to choose hauling iron as a profession is not equipped to be able to manage the people who do. And so you have people, leaders today, who are carrying forward practices that are based upon beliefs that they may not actually agree with. And what we do is we try to create projects that force people really to take a step back and understand the principles and beliefs they have and how those things are starting to evolve.
It's powerful work. You know, the unintentional practices, it very much ties into so much of what I alluded to there in the initial introduction when we talk about how you're working with leaders on practicing unlearning. People hear a statement like that and they just go, what? How? Wait, am I learning or am I not? You know, and so for the beauty of that is that, one, I love that the word, the two words are together. It's practicing unlearning. It's, you're not just telling people how to unlearn. It's a practice. There's a process to it. It's something I always love bringing up and using as a word is practice, because it's that beautiful tie-in from my background working in sport. Is this? It's why it's called practice. It's not called training. It's not called performing. It's because we are practicing to perform. Like that is at the heart of it. And there's always that curiosity that comes in a practice environment of how we can continue to get better at what it is we're doing. And this art of unlearning, you're hitting it right there. It's a practice, and it's an ability to turn around and say, listen, there are some unintentional practices that I'm utilizing right now that I need to unlearn. And that is a process like anything else that requires learning. So unlearning is in so many ways, and I would maybe argue, and you can help me out here, I'm curious, just from your experience, I have to assume that unlearning is more difficult than learning.
It is. It is very often difficult. It reminds me first, though, of the quote from the futurist Alvin Toffler, that the illiterate of the 21st century are not the people who can not read or write, but the people who cannot learn, unlearn, and relearn again. Yeah. And that idea of that, to just to nail that there, the learning and unlearning is so pivotal for people. But why is it hard to unlearn? Too often we've been rewarded and recognized through so many things in life. And whatever was originally working for you probably still serves you in some way. Mm-hmm. And so the book, again, doesn't get into here's the 10 things you need to do as a leader. The book actually just suggests some new ideas and then says, what do you believe? For instance, there's a chapter on letting people have side hustles. Okay. Letting people have side hustles. The end of the chapter doesn't say, now go out and do this. It just says, what did that provoke in you? Mm-hmm. Do you think that's possible? Is it not? Would people take advantage of you or not? Okay. And what do you gain and what do you lose by holding your belief around that? Because you do need to meet people, and they may not be ready to unlearn that thing yet, but they need at least the space to be able to work through that.
Providing the space.
Yeah, creating the space. It's one of the issues, I think, with the older approaches to change management. Is in the past, it was very much like people have to be changed, and you're just taking people and lighting the fire under them and all of those. No, you don't do change to people. You come alongside them, and you create the space for them to be able to uncover, discover that which was already there and just needs to be shepherded into the new space.
Yeah, ownership. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. You know, that this ability to provide space for someone to take ownership in their change, to take ownership in their discovery. You know, that there's no better way to teach. There's no better way to unlearn than someone simply grabbing it themselves and taking ownership for it. And I think that that is something that could almost be a podcast in itself. Maybe that's an idea for a future Coach's Corner that I'm gonna steal from this conversation. But at the heart of the book too is this notion of ripples of impact. And I think this is a beautiful. And again, forgive me if I'm assuming here, but ripples of impact sounds like a result. It sounds like something that people can be aspiring towards based on some of the things that you're providing within this book. So I'd love to learn a little bit more about that concept of ripples of impact, where it's come from.
Yeah. I think the first thing to understand about it, to your point of a result, is when you throw a rock into any water, you can't actually control those ripples of where they're going to go, but you can control that action of being intentional about putting something in there that may have the possibility, right, of creating those ripples of impact. Now, I talk about in the book that it is possible to pursue a traditional return on investment, right? You need a profit and for-profit businesses to live, but that isn't the reason why the best businesses, in my mind, will succeed. And so how might you pursue business that puts the needs and services and growth even of your employees, your customers, all the other stakeholders around it in a way that you can also be positively impacting them? And so, the examples that I use in the book, and I'll just throw out one of the more popular ones, is looking at Patagonia, right? If we look at the history of Patagonia and how they've evolved, one of my favorite stories is in the early days, even before it was called Patagonia, when Yvon Chouinard looked at the climbing business that he was in and saw how it was negatively impacting the environment and intentionally stopped their most profitable business line because he chose this principle of wanting to respect the environment and things they're looking out for, and thought that if I go with my values and my intentions here, we'll see what comes out on both sides of that ROI. And in their case, it turned out to be pretty good and pretty successful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it is, and I'm so glad you took us there. I'm so glad that you prefaced it that, the return on investment is paramount. It is for businesses to survive. But even that story there of Patagonia, it's just how do you actually start to get someone to realize that with that desire to make the impact, with that desire to do good, specifically with that intention to do both of those things, that the original term of ROI, return on investment, it almost takes care of itself. I mean, and that's the part that I hear here. That's the simplicity, again, to use that word. And it's why I always welcome these conversations, because at the heart of everything that we're discussing here so far, Joshua, is that of simplicity. And I'm just curious for you, when in your work over the years and even now through the messages of the book, how easy is it for you to get that message across? Like how easy is that process of getting a leader, getting anyone for that matter, to understand that, hey, the return on the investment will come if you prioritize the right things on the front end?
It is difficult to be able to convince people. And what I found is there's camps of people who already believe that or open to it, or who are not. Mm. And I've chosen to continue to focus our time in the people who get it and see the potential in it. You and I have limited time right now. And so focusing my thoughts there and how to continue to amplify the efforts that those people have. Because I've realized that no amount of case studies are going to prove C and ROI actually does help you also achieve a better impact. But I would say what is helping the case, even for that side of the equation, is the fact that more consumers are demanding it, more employees are demanding it, right? There was a recent survey that showed that 75% of millennials would actually take a pay cut to work for a more purpose-driven, socially responsible organization. Mm-hmm. So I think more and more we're starting to see that it is good business to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of those leaders who already just innately know it, hopefully what we're doing is creating even more space for them to be able to understand how they can, have permission, I guess, to be able to lean into what others might deem as naive.
Yeah, permission from themselves, right?
Permission from themselves. That is a huge thing, yes. Right? Like what stories am I telling myself? Mm-hmm. And also, it's okay that you don't even have to say I was wrong in the past. You can say I have new information now and it's time to make a new decision. Mm-hmm. Right? That is perfectly fine. You could say now that we have learned this. And I think, you know, in some instances, we've seen a lot of great leaders who have been able to make those shifts over time. And that vulnerability and authenticity is welcomed in what people want to see.
That is a valuable insight, just the notion of this doesn't have to be a right versus wrong. And, you know, at the heart of the show is about being competitive. It's about optimizing performance, specifically optimizing yourself. And a huge part of why we get in our own way in pursuit of optimal performance, in pursuit of competing at higher levels, is by simply struggling with that inner maybe argument or dialogue that we have in terms of admitting that we're somehow wrong. And sometimes it's just so much more supportive for our growth to say, this isn't actually about right and wrong. This is about me discovering new information and equipping myself to now advance with it.
There you go.
And again, mm-hmm. that word simplicity comes right back to my, like, it's a simple process when we do it that way. And I'm curious, just from your experience, Joshua, like, why is it that for the most part, those that are driven, those that are motivated to be incredibly successful, struggle so much with just, hey, why is it I can't just let this go? Why is it I can't just accept this as something that's new information and it's time for me now to move on?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. The first one is most of school was set up, as well as most of work has been set up probably to that point in rewarding that behavior of you were right or you were wrong. The critical thinking and the ability to strategically look at things from multiple angles is not always taught or not as rewarded as it should be. And I imagine, Steve, this is you and I, some of our greatest work is we come in and we help people think more strategically or critically, et cetera. The value of having a great coach, right? You've trained, helped practice Olympians. The more elite you get, the more help you actually need from someone outside, right? Who can help you see that there is maybe something that's getting in your way. So some of it is how we've been conditioned over time. And the other then is that story of there's a feeling of loss, right? And going into something unknown or ambiguous is sounds scary or frightening to a lot of people. The first work actually that we end up doing with a lot of those leaders though, is I ask them to draw two lines, a T on its side. And the top of it is a plus, the bottom of it is a minus. And I have them write tick marks of 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40, 50, whatever many years old they are, and to draw a growth line of their life. And what's important about that is everybody has some sort of roller coaster that they're going to put on that line, and it's relevant and contextual for who they are. And everybody who's done that exercise is able to say, huh, I've been through unknown or hard or changed times in the past, and I'm still here and I'm okay. And so it's part of what we were saying before about the change curve. You just have to help people realize that it's okay and they've been there before. And some of those first little breaks help start to break down that idea that, okay, I might be able to admit that I have new information and can make new decisions.
Yeah. And I would love for you here, Joshua, just to provide a little bit of insight of how everything that we've spoken about so far in the episode, how it served you, just in whether it be the growing of Econic, the growing of your own career, the writing of a book. Like, these are all relatable things for people listening that have true desires to achieve similar things. So I'm just curious how this way of doing has actually served you.
Yeah, a lot of examples in life. I'll share. So for the longest time, I didn't want to write a book. I kept pushing back and holding back on writing. And I would say I'm a better curator than I am a creator. There's too many books in the world, right? And I continued to use that as an excuse. But again, it was through the help of a coach that I was able to see that was just an excuse I had to avoid rejection, right? I'm very, very good at facilitating in workshops and being up in front of people, because I can shift and individualize my approach to whatever people need so I don't have to be wrong. That makes sense. Putting words down in writing opened me up to critique and rejection and being wrong. So that was one of the first things that I had to overcome, some of that. And I'm still to this day, when I'm seeing reviews or early feedback, it's hard, right? Snapped and everything is better now. I think the other part of that is I thought, oh, I need to write a book for millions of people. And so I had that idea that I'll never write something big enough. So that story was playing in my head. a different friend said, you know what? You're not writing a book for millions of people. You're writing a book for the 100 people around you who are going to hear that message differently because it's coming from you. And so that also gave permission. So I think that's absolutely it. There have been plenty of times throughout my career, both before I started Econic in consulting and startup work, and then since we started Econic, that I thought I knew everything, and then all of a sudden stuff blew up and I had to again admit that I didn't know what I was doing, and we had to work through it together to figure out what that thing was, right? So
yeah, I really appreciate just that transparency. I think it's important, and vulnerability. I think it's important for people to hear and understand. And it's such a relatable story. It doesn't have to be writing a book. It can be just about anything, any walk of life, where you're so busy focusing on the potential rejection that could come from putting yourself out there that you don't even put yourself out there. And firstly, kudos for doing that. I know how vulnerable a task that is. So, I have such admiration for anyone else willing to do it. But if there's a theme that's coming out of our discussion here today, Joshua, it's that notion of granting yourself permission. So much of what we're talking about here really comes back to that. And I think it's a very powerful message for anyone trying to strive towards optimal performance, trying to compete at higher levels, is that at certain points, you're going to have to grant yourself permission to do certain things, to think a certain way. You know, all of these things are really important factors. And as we come to the close of the conversation, I'd love for you maybe just to provide some insight here on how it is that you maybe relate to this notion of being competitive. I'm curious, when you hear a word like that, and this is what this show is all about, how do you relate to that? Because some people will hear this content today and think, how does this help me be a competitor? And I think I've done a pretty good job of summarizing it, but I would love for you to really sort of send us home here in terms of how you relate to it.
This is a struggle for me because I don't actually consider myself a very competitive person, Steve. So when you granted me to come onto this podcast, I thought, man, how am I going to show up in this way? In fact, there's even a chapter in my book about how winning and losing are helpful illusions. and so that's how I'll bring it to it, right? Like, I used to only pursue win-wins with a lot of things. And it was because I think I feared conflict more than I did competition, right? But by being able to understand that winning and losing actually are helpful illusions for what I'm trying to get done, it actually permitted me to be more competitive, right? Because I realized that each of the things that I went into was more a game than I originally thought it was in the first place. And so a concrete example of that is recently part of our team at Econic split off to form a new entity. It took about a week or two of me grinding my teeth and being frustrated about that. And then to be able to go, and I had to remind myself of, okay, winning and losing are sometimes helpful illusions. It's good that I got angry about that. It's good that I was frustrated about that. It shows that I'm passionate about and I care about the thing that I'm trying to build. And I can say thanks to that. And then I can say, we just birthed a whole new company. That's pretty darn cool. And it actually goes back to our vision, which was about creating space for people to practice the behaviors that grow themselves and their businesses. And so it's, again, it's probably a spin off of the competitor podcast and the different things that are in there, but it definitely resonates competition with me in a different way.
I mean, it absolutely does. And I'm always excited to get people's insight because I've had every response over the years when I ask similar questions. And I'm always very comfortable with someone coming back and being like, I don't consider myself to be competitive. And that, I believe, is where my job comes in as almost a detective in these episodes to pull those qualities out of you and say, well, I don't know, the information I'm seeing here, I see a little bit of it here and a little bit of it here. And so for me, I personally enjoy the dance that we get to go on together and start to identify some of that stuff. And I certainly hear some of it there. And as I've alluded to here, just in some closing thoughts, Joshua, I think there's so much here for any competitor out there to really lean on and pull upon and relate to in terms of their own competitive journey towards optimal performance and being their best self. But firstly, thank you so much for the insight. This is just wonderful insight. Secondly, please provide all the information people need to know about, first and foremost, yourself, Econic, but then also the book too.
Absolutely. Econic, spelled E-C-O-N-I-C, is most active on LinkedIn. So you can find information about Econic there or at econic.co. That's .co, not no M. You can learn more about me at joshualeeberry.com or the book website, which is daretobenaive.com.
And all that information is going to be in the show notes. And again, Joshua, this has just been wonderful. It's been great. I love sharing a space with folks like yourself that, you know, very much come from similar principles to what I practice and what I do each and every day. And just thank you so much for the generosity of time and certainly the generosity of insight. It's been wonderful.
Well, Steve, I appreciate it. And I appreciate, again, the message that you bring into the world to help people be their best.
Hey, don't go anywhere. I've got my final thoughts coming up from our guest today. So please take some time, give it a moment, take a drink. I got a couple more minutes I need to get out of you. Some final thoughts. Here we go. My thanks again to Joshua for joining us on this episode of Career Competitor. And in closing, I really want to just reemphasize this notion of giving yourself permission. I think it's a powerful message. I really do. And I love that the conversation really brought this to light because I think it's something we all struggle with. I think it does get in the way of a competitor optimizing themselves and optimizing performance because sometimes we just create, as Joshua alluded to, stories. We create these stories. We create these perspectives in our mind for why we can and cannot do something. And that ability to give ourselves permission to sometimes admit that we need to learn, admit that we need to grow, admit that there's maybe mistakes that have been made. There's an element of giving yourself permission in order to do that. And again, full vulnerability, that is okay. It's okay. And as a leader, it's encouraged. It's encouraged to go out, as you heard there again from Joshua. The research shows that employees, those people that you lead, they are looking for you to embody a growth mindset. That growth mindset means that you have to give yourself permission to get things wrong, but frame it in a way where you're not focused on the admittance of doing wrong, but more on the desire to learn and grow from it. That vulnerability speaks to people. It helps others do the same. It leads people into spaces where they can do good. So those intentions to do good can now be seen to fruition and give you that return on your investment and in turn give you that ripple of impact in the work that you're doing as well. So find ways on your competitive journey to give yourself more permission. In that, you will start to realize how harsh you can sometimes be on yourself, how restrictive you can sometimes be on yourself, but also how capable you are of stepping into opportunity that otherwise you will not have considered stepping into. So I'm really appreciative for just the open conversation there with Joshua. It really allowed for some shift in perspective for myself. And I get to say that as someone who shares a very similar perspective already to that of Joshua. So I have to assume that it was of impact to you on your competitive journey as well. Continue to keep coming back to Career Competitor. We have so many guests lined up. We have so much great content coming your way. This is valuable content, and you should not be selfish about it. You should be sharing it with as many people as possible, having an impact. Go back to Joshua's message, providing a ripple of impact to others within your network, and show them what this type of insight can do for them. Allow them to know that you're benefiting from it by sharing these episodes, by letting people know that you're subscribed to the show. And finally, I would love for you to reach out. Let me know your thoughts on the show. Maybe let me know if you or someone you know could be an ideal guest to join Career Competitor as well. But as always, guys, in the meantime, best of luck with anything and everything you've got going on within your world. And I look forward to doing this all again with you very soon. Bye for now.